It is T-minus 5 days until Election Day. Early voting is underway in Boston. Both candidates for mayor are on a campaign blitz, trying to get in front of as many voters as possible before next Tuesday. So we are grateful that they've both carved out some time today and tomorrow to join us here on Radio Boston, take our questions, and take your calls. And that starts right now with Boston City Councilor Michelle Wu, who is on the line with us. Councilor Wu, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. Great to be with you.
Great to have you. And Councilor Wu is taking your calls. What questions do you have? Everything's on the table, from policing to housing to free public transit. And we are going to try to limit calls to people who are not directly working with either campaign. The phone number to call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Councilor, turning to you, we had two town halls last week, one with you, one with Councilor Saibi George. You really engaged with us deeply about who you are, what brings you to the campaign, what you care about. We appreciated that. Our listeners heard a good chunk of that here on the show. So this week, we want to approach with that same intensity again, but really engage with policy. And I'd like to start with policing. We were unable to get to it in the final candidate debate on WCVB on Monday night, which WBUR was one of the co-hosts of. So if you are elected, you'd be in charge of hiring a new police commissioner. How long do you anticipate it'll take to complete that process? And what is something specific that you will look for in that next commissioner, be it, you know, experience, qualifications, personal trait, that you believe would be most indicative of an ability to turn around the culture at the Boston Police Department?
You know, I have had conversations and already learned so much from folks who've been involved with previous police commissioner searches here in Boston and elsewhere. It is a very monumental decision for the next mayor to make, one of the most important city posts that need to be filled. And so rather than putting a strict timeline on it, I will say that it is urgent that we need to kick it off right away with community engagement, setting the values and the parameters, and then engaging in a thorough nationwide search for the next leader of the department. For me, the priorities will be choosing someone who can be a partner in building trust with the public and delivering the scale of change needed within the department. We need to have accountability and transparency, change the way that we're doing things. And that will, there will be a quick turnaround, because the most actionable way that we affect all of those things is through renegotiating the police union contract, which is currently very expired, more than a year at this point, and so we'll need to get right into it.
So let's pick up on both those. First, a quick follow-up. I understand you don't want to impose a strict timeline. You also say urgent. So help people in Boston set their heads. Is 6 months reasonable? Too long? Is 12 months reasonable? Too long? End of the year? Roughly, what is an important time frame in which to do it right, but also get it done, given the urgency you just cited?
Yeah, so within the first 100 days, we will be up and running, and especially with the, knock on wood, transition framing, there will be a very important piece to getting the police commissioner search launched right away. And then we need to conclude this to get going on delivering the change that has been laid out in the police reform task force and negotiating the new union contract. Certainly by the end of the first year, we need to be well on our way into making progress on those fronts. So I will look to move as quickly as possible, but ensure that we're making the right decision.
So let's stay on the contract. It's something I've been wanting to ask you about a while. You talk a lot about the need to renegotiate that contract, and I'm assuming that means there are things you feel need to be in it or not in it in order to reform the police department in the ways that you see as necessary. Police unions are powerful. I am thinking of their efficacy here and across the country, for example, on qualified immunity. And you do not have the support of the police unions here in this race. What do you believe that you can do with that next contract that previous mayors have been unable to do that would lead to the kind of reform you value? What's going to be in or out of that contract that hasn't been there before?
Every police officer I speak to understands and shares the feeling that we need to earn the trust of the public and that this is a moment to demonstrate progress in transparency and accountability. Now, we might not agree on every little detail of how we get there, and there will be some tough discussions along the way. I've been pushing for changes, for example, in how we shift certain functions away from armed law enforcement to responding to mental health crises, for example. But to start from a point of wanting to have public safety grounded in public health and the community's trust, that I believe is a set of values that will allow us to determine immediate next steps. Now, I've already laid out over the course of this campaign the exact parameters that I'm hoping our next police union contract negotiation will include. And so there's a plan up on our website, which includes, for example, moving towards an objective discipline matrix, because we do see such either when instances of misconduct occur, a shielding of accountability, or disparities based on race or based on other circumstances for how discipline is administered in response to incidents. And so I would like to ensure that we're consistent and have that objective matrix that will apply across the board and eliminate these biases. My priority, as mentioned, is also on changing how we staff and respond to certain situations, drawing on more of a public health lens, and to get the overtime line item under control, because as that dollar figure balloons, it is drawing away resources that are badly needed to stabilize communities and elsewhere.
What amount of reduction in the overtime budget would be having it under control? Percentage-wise, even.
The problem with how we've been picking numbers in the past is that you could say 10%, you could say $50 million or whatever the amount is, unless it is actually driven by changes to personnel and staffing, we won't truly see the results. In the last two budget cycles, we've actually seen a cut in the line item, the overtime line item in the budget, but because by law we are obligated to pay out every hour of overtime worked, regardless of how much is in the budget, we have blown way past that in the former budget cycle and may be on track to do that again with this budget cycle. And so 95%+ of the police budget is accounted for with positions and with staff and personnel costs and associated costs to that. And so this is about organizational change and the structures and culture of the dollars that would flow from that.
So, Counselor, I'm about to go to the phones, and I can see from the people who are calling that when we do that, we're going to move off of policing. So in a sentence, I understand your pushback on specifics here, but what's the number one thing people can count on you if you're elected mayor to do about with the Boston Police Department?
We will change the structures and culture of policing to ensure accountability, transparency, and that we are closing racial disparities with how our officers interact with the public.
All right, let's go to the phones here, 1-800-423-8255 to ask your question. We are with Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Michelle Wu. Debbie is on the line in Charlestown. Debbie, go ahead with your question.
Hi, my question is what your thoughts are on the exam school admission policies, the new changes, and specifically neighborhoods such as the North End and Charlestown, and the fact that the number of seats have decreased so much that people may be needing to switch to private schools or move out of the city.
Go ahead, Counselor.
Thank you, Debbie, for calling in. I know what so many of the families who are worried are what that feels like. My younger sister, when I served as her legal guardian, went through that process and went to an exam school, and that calculation that every family has to go through, what if this doesn't work out? What are the other options? Will we need to make major life changes? That's just an unacceptable calculus that we're forcing on our school communities. When it comes to this current formulation of the exam school admissions process, we are in the first year of a current 2-year approved plan. I do support having an exam, having grades and socioeconomic criteria. I'm concerned about some pieces of this current plan, and will be engaging very closely to follow the numbers and to continue pushing for data. I do have some outstanding questions that I've already given to the school department and am awaiting answers on.
What's
but the larger issue is that we will not be at a place where we are serving residents until every single high school seat is one that we are proud of. And so I support and have been working with parents and school communities as we're thinking about what all the pathways from school to career and school to secondary education should look like through BPS.
What specific pieces of the current plan do you have concerns about? You just said that there are some.
Well, we're currently adding a 10-point bump that is based on school communities and set at a certain threshold. It's set at school communities with 40% poverty, which even in the last couple of weeks has seen different school communities bounce over and under that threshold. I want to see the individual socioeconomic situations of our students accounted for and believe that that should be part of equity within the system. But I'm going to be following very closely to, again, continue to get some answers on questions I've posed around this particular piece with entire school communities being treated in this way or that way.
So with this change in formula, equity has been part of the focus, which means that it may change the balance of who has access to and gets into exam schools. Are you comfortable with that change?
I support efforts to ensure we have equity across all of our district and believe that the exam schools need to reflect that equity. And so I do support changes to the process as it had stood prior to the pandemic. We need to be ensuring that the energy and the political will and the investments that we're making to truly deliver equity, we have to be looking at every single one of our high schools as well. And that's why I visited every single one of our BPS high schools, sat with school leaders and young people, school nurses and educators in these buildings. The potential is there, and the resilience of our students, the hard work of our school leaders and teachers. We just need to make the investments and ensure that we're looking at each one of our seats.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your question of Boston mayoral candidate and city councilor Michelle Wu. Kim is on the line in Dorchester. Kim, go ahead.
Hi, I am calling both as a BPS parent and also as the president of the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts with a question about literacy, particularly for kids in grades 3 to 12. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your ideas and plans for really normalizing the high literacy achievement for Black and brown kids, because we know that literacy rates have been lagging. So I'd love to know like what you're going to do for older kids.
Thanks. Counselor.
Thank you so much, Kim, and thanks for what you do and your advocacy and civic leadership. You know, I am currently making my way through a book reviewing Superintendent Tom Paysant's time in BPS and how much the focus on having clear standards across the board, focused on literacy and focused on curriculum, presented a feeling of cohesion grade by grade, school by school. You know, I think we, obviously it's been a very tumultuous set of years with the pandemic. And my older son, who is in first grade now, went through Zoom kindergarten. And to watch the children and their amazing teacher try to learn how to read and write letters over Zoom, it was heartbreaking in some cases to see the internet connections that were so slow and the various barriers that were in the way. So we've lost out on really important time, and there's been so much trauma that our families in BPS have been absorbing that, I think we need to do multiple pieces at once. One, of course, stabilize and just reconnect our communities. We will not get to literacy and academics if we are not also thinking about mental health supports and addressing the social and emotional needs of our school communities more than ever right now. And then when it comes to literacy, getting back to a place where in BPS we used to have much clearer consistent standards, guidance for new teachers, especially programs with mentoring teacher to teacher, and having committees made up of educators helping set curriculum for different grades. I want to make sure that we're deferring to and leaning on the expertise of those who know best, which is our educators in the classroom, and to have the feedback mechanisms and standard setting that comes from that kind of involvement. But certainly, Kim, please reach out. I would love to get your specific thoughts and ideas and recommendations.
So, Kim, let me just follow back up with you. Do you feel like that answered your question?
No, not really, because there's lots of talk about younger children, older kids, grades 3 to 12 have different needs. And again, right, I think what's most important is that we are connecting them and extending their literacy lives. And I think that's the gap. So I'm really looking for a plan, like what's going to happen to them.
So Counselor Wu, is there more you'd like to add for Kim?
I would love to follow up with Kim and just make sure that I'm understanding what the specific recommendations are. For me, leaning into the Boston Public Schools as a BPS mom is going to be the place that I spend my time and political capital and energy. And, you know, we are at crisis level in many respects, right? There are conversations about receivership and the ways that the state is trying to impose accountability. There are continued concerns about the pandemic. This also means that we are in a moment of realignment and using the resources we have from ESSER fund or the federal recovery funds. We can be really intentional. And so I'd love to make sure that I know what direction of plan Kim is thinking about too.
We can help facilitate that connection in the control room. We'll make sure to do that. I'd like to go back to the phones here. 800-423-8255. Damon is calling from Somerville. Damon, go ahead.
Hi, I had a question about affordable.
Oh, Damon, we just lost you. Damon, start over. We lost you. We're going to see if we can get you back. Go ahead. Start over with your question.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I had a question about affordable housing and rent control and what your position was on both of those, whether they're important to you and that you plan to impose rent control.
And I will add my own to that, Councillor Wu, as you answer Damon's question, which is further reaction to Governor Baker at the state level saying he's not sure he would sign a bill that sought to bring rent control back. It was abolished in 1994 at the state level. To you, Councillor.
Yep. And thanks, Damon. Yes, it was a really interesting conversation that we got to hear, Tiziana, yesterday with the governor on that. Look, housing stability is the foundation for so much of what we're talking about, for the ability for students and our school communities to work well, for health and safety and economic opportunity. And so out of our federal recovery funds coming to the city of Boston, I'm committed to immediately deploying $200 million for housing stability and to boost home ownership to close the racial wealth gap. I do support rent stabilization as a tool that can help while we are boosting supply of housing and bringing more housing units online that can be affordable for our residents in the immediate term to provide relief and ensure that we are not seeing continued displacement of our residents, right? The census data, all the numbers show that Boston is increasingly becoming an unaffordable city, and particularly that is impacting Black and Brown communities as families are being displaced from Boston. If this is an issue that would require city and state collaboration to move forward, but as I was saying earlier today on various other radio interviews, it's different to talk about broad theory of does someone support X idea, be it rent control or congestion pricing or anything like that. That is very different from having a specific proposal that has come through a public process, been vetted, and includes all of the ways in which we might reflect the needs of various community groups translated into policy. That is the bread and butter of legislation and lawmaking, something that I've been very eager to roll up my sleeves and seen a lot of success in over the last 8 years on the city council. and getting to those specifics and finding that consensus for immediate steps will be a priority.
Let's pick up Brian in Everett. Brian, go ahead with your question for a Boston mayoral candidate, Michelle Wu.
Hello, thank you. So my question is, so what is basically your plans for infrastructure, to be more specific, the roadways? Because like out of all the states I've been to in this country, Massachusetts has like the absolute worst roads that I've ever driven on in my life.
Brian, thank you for that. And Councillor, I'm just going to reframe, since you're running for mayor of Boston, how can you? This is one of those many questions about doing something in the city that is dependent on the region. What is your plan for roads in the city of Boston and how to collaborate regionally on that?
Brian, I think many people share your sentiment. At one of our most recent candidate forums or debates, one of the callers described it as driving on a corn cob situation, just bumps and bumps with potholes. The city of Boston has a whole lot to do here. Most of our roadways in Boston are administered and paved and maintained by city government. And I think there's two issues here. One is how effective we are at getting out there quickly to be responsive to individual concerns or the condition of specific roads that have been highlighted, or I'll extend this to even including sidewalks, for example, cracks in the sidewalks or pavement markings, crosswalks that need to be repainted. And then the second issue is making sure there's equity in how we do this. So much of city services now, you can hardly talk about any kind of city service without talking about the 311 app, where individual residents can report in, take a picture of a pothole and send it directly to the Public Works Department to fix that. But if we get into a situation where we're only responding to what's been reported, then we often can end up exacerbating inequities and communities that may not be as connected to this app or have the resources to be spending time cataloging all of the issues. Let's move towards a much more proactive approach where we are putting city services front and center, but ensuring that there's equity where we walk with neighborhood associations on a daily basis, as opposed to waiting for the requests and complaints to come in before taking action.
So we are almost out of time. I'd like to do a quick lightning round, just one sentence answers. You were on GBH today talking about requiring proof of vaccination to enter certain businesses or venues. You liked New York's approach. Would you mandate proof of vaccination in businesses in the city of Boston?
Yes, I'd like to get to that place where we could do so with our public health infrastructure, managing that rather than putting the burden on small business owners.
Any sneak previews of Halloween costumes in your house?
We are all about Transformers right now. And so I'm very lucky that my sister finds fun in helping the kids make their Halloween costumes over the last couple of years. So I think Optimus Prime and Bumblebee will be featured in just in a couple of days.
And quickly, I hear you don't really drink coffee. So what's your Dunkin' order?
Yeah, I'm not a coffee drinker. I'm so sorry to report. I'll usually go in for munchkins or iced tea with lemon, but most often I'm there for a little sugar.
All right. Boston mayoral candidate and city councilor Michelle Wu, thanks so much for joining us and taking listener calls today.
Thank you.